Chapter 107. Dear Payne, thanks for your letter, and for its contenting news of the situation in that foreign, and far-off and vaguely remembered country, where you and Loomis and Lark and other beloved friends are. I have a letter from Clara this morning. She is solicitous, and wants me well and watchfully taken care of. My, she ought to see Helen and her parents and Claude administer that trust. Also she says, I hope to hear from you or Mr. Payne very soon. I am writing her, and I know you will respond to your part of her prayer. She is pretty desolate now, after John's emancipation, the only kindness God ever did that poor unoffending child in all her hard life. It's ever S50. See, send Clara a copy of Howell's gorgeous letter. I want a copy of my article that he is speaking of. The gorgeous letter was concerning Mark Twain's article, The Turning Point in My Life, which had just appeared in one of the Harper publications. Howells wrote of it, "While your wonderful words are warm in my mind yet, I want to tell you what you know already. That you never wrote anything greater, finer, than that Turning Point paper of yours. From yearly Bermuda letters we may gather that Mark Twain's days were enjoyable enough, and that his malady was not giving him serious trouble, thus far. Near the end of January he wrote, "Life continues here the same as usual. There isn't a flaw in it. Good times, good home, tranquil contentment all day and every day, without a break. I shouldn't know how to go about bettering my situation." He did little in the way of literary work, probably finding neither time nor inclination for it. When he wrote at all, it was merely to set down some fanciful drolleries with no thought of publication. To Prof. William Lyon Phelps, Yale College. Hamilton, March 12. Dear Professor Phelps, I thank you ever so much for the book, Professor Phelps' Essays on Modern Novelists, which I find charming, so charming indeed, that I read it through in a single night, and did not regret the lost night's sleep. I am glad, if I deserve what you have said about me. And even if I don't, I am proud and well contented, since you think I deserve it. Yes, I saw Prof. Lounsbury, and had a most pleasant time with him. He ought to have stayed longer in this little paradise, partly for his own sake, but mainly for mine. I knew my poor John had written you. I shall not have so dear and sweet a secretary again. Good health to you, and all good fortune attend you. Sincerely yours, S50. Clemens. He would appear to have written not many letters besides those to Mrs. Gabrilowitsch and to Stormfield, but when a little girl sent him a report of a dream, inspired by reading The Prince and the Pauper, he took the time and trouble to acknowledge it, realizing, no doubt, that a line from him would give the child happiness. To Miss Sulamuth, in New York. A House, Bermuda, March 21, 1910. Dear Miss Sulamuth, I think it is a remarkable dream for a girl of 13 to have dreamed, in fact for a person of any age to have dreamed, because it moves by regular grade and sequence from the beginning to the end, which is not the habit of dreams. I think your report of it is a good piece of work, a clear and effective statement of the vision. I am glad to know you like The Prince and the Pauper so well, and I believe with you, that the dream is good evidence of that liking. I think I may say, with your sister, that I like myself best when I am serious. Sincerely yours, S50. Clemens. Through February, and most of March, letters and reports from him were about the same. He had begun to plan for his return, and concerning amusements at Stormfield for the entertainment of the neighbors, and for the benefit of the library which he had founded soon after his arrival in Reading. In these letters he seldom mentioned the angina pains that had tortured him earlier. But once, when he sent a small photograph of himself, it seemed to us that his face had become thin, and that he had suffered. Certainly his next letter was not reassuring. To A. B. Payne, in Reading. Dear Payne, we must look into the magic lantern business. Maybe the modern lantern is too elaborate and troublesome for back settlement use, but we can inquire. We must have some kind of a show at Tormfield to entertain the countryside with. We are booked to sail in the Bermudi in April 23rd, but don't tell anybody, I don't want it known. I may have to go sooner if the pain in my breast doesn't mend its ways pretty considerably. I don't want to die here, for this is an unkind place for a person in that condition. I should have to lie in the undertaker's cellar until the ship would remove me, and it is dark down there and unpleasant. The colliers will meet me on the pier, and I may stay with them a week or two before going home. It all depends on the breast pain. I don't want to die there. I am growing more and more particular about the place. With love, S. 50. See, this letter had been written by the hand of his secretary, Helen Allen. Writing had become an effort to him. Yet we did not suspect how rapidly the end was approaching, and only grew vaguely alarmed. A week later, however, it became evident that his condition was critical. Dear Payne, I have been having a most uncomfortable time for the past 4 days with that breast pain, which turns out to be an affection of the heart, just as I originally suspected. The news from New York is to the effect that non-bronchial weather has arrived there at last, therefore if I can get my breast trouble in traveling condition I may sail for home a week or two earlier than has heretofore been proposed. Yours as ever, S. 50. Clemens, R.H.S. A. In this letter he seems to have forgotten that his trouble had been pronounced an affection of the heart long before he left America, though at first it had been thought that it might be gastritis. The same mail brought a letter from Mr. Allen explaining fully the seriousness of his condition. I sailed immediately for Bermuda, arriving there on the 4th of April. He was not suffering at the moment, though the pains came now with alarming frequency and violence. He was cheerful and brave. He did not complain. He gave no suggestion of a man whose days were nearly ended. A part of the Stormfield estate had been a farm, which he had given to John Clemens, whereas he had busied herself raising some livestock and poultry. After her death he had wished the place to be sold, and the returns devoted to some memorial purpose. The sale had been made during the winter, and the price received had been paid in cash. I found him full of interest in all affairs, and anxious to discuss the memorial plan. A day or two later he dictated the following letter, the last he would ever send. It seemed fitting that this final word from one who had so long given happiness to the whole world should record a special gift to his neighbors. To Charles T. Lark, in New York. Hamilton, Bermuda. April 6, 1910. Dear Mr. Lark, I have told Payne that I want the money derived from the sale of the farm, which I had given, but not conveyed, to my daughter John, to be used to erect a building for the Mark Twain Library of Reading, the building to be called the John 50. Clemens Memorial Building. I wish to place the money $6,000.000 in the hands of three trustees, Payne and two others, H.A. Lounsbury and William E. Hazen, all of Reading, these trustees to form a building committee, to decide on the size and plan of the building needed, and to arrange for and supervise the work in such a manner that the fund shall amply provide for the building complete, with necessary furnishings, leaving, if possible, a balance remaining, sufficient for such repairs and additional furnishings as may be required for 2 years from the time of completion. Will you please draw a document covering these requirements, and have it ready by the time I reach New York April 14th. Very sincerely, S. 50. Clemens. We sailed on the 12th of April, reaching New York on the 14th, as he had planned. A day or two later, Mr. and Mrs. Gabrilowitsch, summoned from Italy by cable, arrived. He suffered very little after reaching Stormfield, and his mind was comparatively clear up to the last day. On the afternoon of April 21st he sank into a state of coma, and just at sunset he died. 3 days later, at Elmira, New York, he was laid beside Mrs. Clemens, and those others who had preceded him. The Last Day at Stormfield by Bliss Carman. At Redding, Connecticut, the April sunrise pours over the hardwood ridges, softening and greening now in the first magic of spring. The wild cherry trees are in bloom, the bloodroot is white underfoot, the serene early light flows on, touching with glory the world, and flooding the large upper room, where a sick man sleeps. Slowly he opens his eyes, after long weariness, smiles, and stretches arms overhead, while those about him take heart. With his awakening strength, morning and spring in the air, the strong clean scents of earth, the call of the golden shaft, ringing across the hills, he takes up his heartening book, opens the volume and reads, a page of old rugged Carlyle, the dour philosopher who looked askance upon life, lurid, ironical, grim, yet sound at the core. But weariness returns. He lays the book aside with his glasses upon the bed, and gladly sleeps. Sleep, blessed abundant sleep, is all that he needs. And when the close of day reddens upon the hills, and washes the room with rose, in the twilight hush the summoner comes to him ever so gently, unseen, touches him on the shoulder, and with the departing sun our great funning friend is gone. How he has made us laugh! A whole generation of men smiled in the joy of his wit. But who knows, whether he was not like those deep jesters of old who dwelt at the courts of kings, Arthurs, Pendragons, Lears, plying the wise fool's trade, making men merry at will, hiding their deeper thoughts under a motley array, keen-eyed, serious men, watching the sorry world, the gaudy pageant of life, with pity and wisdom and love. Fearless, extravagant, wild, his caustic merciless mirth was leveled at pompous shams. Doubt not behind that mask there dwelt the soul of a man, resolute, sorrowing, sage, as sure a champion of good as ever rode forth to fray. Haply, who knows? Somewhere in Avalon, Isle of Dreams, in vast contentment at last, with every grief done away, while Chaucer and Shakespeare wait, and Molière hangs on his words, and servants not far off listens and smiles apart, with that incomparable drawl he is jesting with Dagonet now.
Copyright, 1910, by Collier's Weekly.
End of this project. Gutenberg, a text of letters vol. 6 by Mark Twain. MTCLT by Gutenberg Edition.